Welcome to the Dungeon Plunger Podcast. My name is Jason Weeb, and this is the show in which I, a real-life janitor and dungeon master, teaches you how to plunge in and run a better Dungeons & Dragons game. Without further ado, let's plunge into this week's episode. Welcome, Dungeon Plunger Union members. I have my plus one plunger. I've got a cup of holy water, my deliciously flavored coffee. And as always, I have a special union member with me today to help plunge the dungeon and flush evil down the drain. Our guest today is a prolific writer, artist, blogger. Welcome to the show, Courtney Campbell.
Thank you. That's accurate. I am. I'm a writer and an illustrator for sure.
You wouldn't say that you're prolific or a blogger?
I mean, am I prolific? I've been doing it for a while. What is it? We'd have to define it, I think.
You have a lot to say about stuff.
I do have a lot to say about stuff. It's true.
Let me start off this whole thing with saying, first of all, thank you to Dark Fluid for hooking us up. He's a scholar and a gentleman. But my first question is, quantum ogres, are they an endangered species, and why do you feel so strongly about them?
Oh, you know, that's a blast from the past. Sure. I think they are, right? Like, I used to, when I was in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s and reading online, I used to get so angry at the stupid things people would say and the things that they would do. And then at a certain point, I began talking about it, you know, like, look, you're playing a game with people. The object is not to remove their agency. It's to provide them choices, and you can't force an outcome. You should be there to play too, to find out what happens. And it was sort of a shift. You know, we all know the shift. It was on G+, and it changed the direction of the main D&D, you know. It was I'd say a creative success overall for the industry. And now I can go read threads in D&D and they only make me go blind and get angry about 20% of the time instead of like 100% of the time.
Before we get too deep into things, could you just give us a little brief, you know, synopsis of who you are and how did you get into gaming?
Oh, I got into gaming when I was like 7 years old and my dad bought the Player's Handbook. And you're flipping through it. You see that picture of that paladin and you're like, there's something here. I'm also, I'm schizophrenic. So I've always sort of not experienced things in the same way other people have experienced them. And that's not good, by the way. That's not like a benefit or a thing. I would give anything to avoid that. But D&D, you know, it provides sort of a fascinating rational structure for the expedition into the unknown to retrieve knowledge and bring it back to civilization, you know, to grow the tree. And that's cool. And it kind of fulfills ancient holistic purposes. I mean, it's sort of a vision quest, right? And I have a lot of thoughts about, you know, sitting down and the shared reality makes it real. When you sort of auger through dice, I've talked about this all on my blog over years. And at a certain point, it's just like, how long do you want to just talk about something if you don't actually do something? And so I decided to do things. I sort of condensed all of my thoughts into an alternate Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master's Guide, Monster Manual called the Negative Space Trilogy. It's the On Downtime and Domains, Artifices, Deceptions, and Dilemmas, and Bestial Encounters for Caused by Monstrous Inhabitation. And the names are a pun on D&D, of course, OD&D, AD&D, and BECMI. But the books themselves are sort of like the collected, my thoughts. And then once I'd collected them, I didn't want to do the thing where, you know, you just repeat what you say over and over and sort of don't, like, say anything new. And so I decided to make things. And so we have Sinless and Perdition and new games. Yeah.
Talking about your schizophrenia, I feel like you're open about it. How has that affected your sort of experience with the game? Because specifically D&D being how it's perceived as, or at least back in the day, associated with Satan worship and all sorts of stuff like that. How did, like, you, I imagine that those two things combined must have made things kind of difficult in that regard. Or
yeah, I live in the Bible Belt too. I don't know that was ever really an issue. Like, it's a scary word, right? Ooh, I have schizotypal personality disorder. It doesn't come with a great deal of psychosis. It makes me, I have difficulty maintaining relationships, and it includes things like odd appearance and dress and cadence of speech, which people, you know, I guess notice. Right. But I think that, you know, we're all part of a human organism, and everybody has their own individual design and role and makeup. And, you know, it's a scary word, but it just defines a certain type of people. You know, some people are autistic, some people are athletic, some people are schizophrenic. You know, I'm medicated. I was diagnosed by a local doctor. I don't know that. I think that a lot of writers and TTRPG creators and musicians are probably have had schizotypal personality disorder. It's sort of, you know, part and parcel with the type of thing that makes somebody want to sit alone for 18 hours in a room and draw pictures. I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm open about it because, like, it's just, it's not anything to be not open about. It explains a lot of things. You shouldn't agree with the weird things that a schizophrenic thinks.
Right.
Like, you should enjoy their art and, you know.
But I mean, I guess the reason I ask is, so, because there is that stigma that's associated with people who have mental health issues or
is there a stigma?
I
think that if somebody has that stigma, it is irrelevant to me, which is symptomatic. It's a type of personality disorder. I don't care. I've never considered what somebody else might think as a motivation for any of my behavior.
Well, I mean, I think that's a healthy way of looking at it. But in terms of, like, let's say you're the average.
I disagree with that, by the way. I don't think it's healthy at all. I think people in general, for their well-being, should be very concerned with what the monkeys around them think, right? With what their peers think.
Interesting.
Because they're at risk to them. I don't have that reaction. So I can like insert it intellectually, but I don't actually have any concern. If somebody dismisses me or has a stigma of me because I've been diagnosed with schizophrenia, that seems like a them problem. But it's dangerous for me because then, you know, they take action. Like, sometimes people don't like things. They act, right? And I always get surprised by that.
But I mean, so let's say I'm a game master, right? Because originally, the focus before I kind of went into deep into interviews and stuff like that, I was kind of promoting myself more as like giving game master advice, how to make you a better game master. If I'm a game master sitting at a table and I have a new group of friends, I'm not, you know, some of them I'm really good friends with them. Some of them are new people that I've never met. Like, let's say you show up at my table. How would you suggest that game masters learn to deal with or interact with people who suffer from the similar sort of situations?
Well, that's a tough question. I worked in mental health for 20 years. So, like, I have a lot of experience dealing with narcissists and schizophrenics and racists and alcoholics and, you know, like, you should take classes. Like, there's no, like, need different techniques for different types of people, right? The normal thing is if somebody's sitting at it, like, it's like the same thing if they're missing a limb, you know, if they're sitting at a table, their GAF is obviously high enough. Their general assessment of functioning is obviously high enough. So you just treat them like you treat a person, ask them what they want. They may not want the things you want. They may not, you know, the person who has the artificial arm will let you know if they need assistance. Don't treat them like somebody who's disabled. I think that's just the broad thing, is you treat them like a person, right?
Fair. So if, for instance, because you're saying, like, we shouldn't necessarily agree with some of the things that you say, then how would
that's crazy. I'm literally crazy.
So
there's a book that says this person is crazy. Don't agree with
So how would you approach somebody then? Would you basically take them aside after the game and say, hey, dude, like, you know, I observed this kind of behavior or this kind of thing happened. It made me feel uncomfortable. I wasn't really sure how to address it with you. Like, is that what you would suggest?
That's normal, assertive human communication, right? You know about the communication styles, right? Passive aggressive, aggressive and assertive. You just use the normal stuff, right? You just if something weird is going on, and I'm super normal running a game. Like, I don't think anybody would ever think like, oh, there's something wrong with that guy. You know, people, they learn how to get along, you know, because it's not a visible disorder. You probably have played with people who have all kinds of mental disorders in the past, right?
Yeah.
You just use assertive communication. You say, you know, I don't understand your motivation for that. Why are you doing that? Let's talk about that, right? Or what are you trying to accomplish? Just avoid the end run around the GM, whatever, right? You're playing the game together. I'm not trying to trick anybody. Let's just have a discussion.
Yeah,
I don't. You sound like you have a specific behavior in mind, though. An instance that you've experienced.
I mean, I'm always fascinated. I've always been fascinated with people about why do people think the way they do? Why do they act the way they do? What motivates them to do the things they do? You know, I used to think like, why do serial killers do serial killer things? I'm a little less. I guess, and I don't want to say enamored with serial killers because that sounds creepy, but I
also listen to a lot of true crime, Jason. It's all right. I like it.
Well, not that I want to dismiss this conversation, but
no, it's like this all the time with me. I just want you to know
it's okay.
Everything is going to go like this.
That's fair. And honestly, I prefer these kinds of conversations where people have. You know, I'm not just asking the questions and then we're like getting like a direct. I prefer the long scenic route.
I mean, like it is directly tied into what we're here talking about, which is the sinless and the sinless Kickstarters. Yes. These are my thoughts. Like, I can't just come out and say these things because people just dismiss it. But you put in a work of fiction, you create some dynamic things, you create very realistic situations that we're going to be facing in a matter of time. People uplifting and marrying their animals, 100% is going to happen. Life extension,
right?
Like all the fusion power, AI replacing all labor. So let's go. Let's see.
So I just want to say, cyberpunk, I feel is more not as much the cyber, but definitely the concept of fighting the man feels like it's really come back in to like vogue. People were like, cyberpunk is dead. The cyberpunk thing has like passed us. We're living in the cyberpunk era now. We are completely being taken over by corporations. You know, that's the part I think that's the scariest is that we don't see it.
No, we do. They stole the wealth of America. There's no question. In 2020, 2019, all the money in America that people had was siphoned upward, and now it's in the bellies of like 6 or 7 giant ticks.
But it's not a thing that you see in the sense of like Arisaka is the you know, like we don't have a face. I almost feel like these mega corporations like to have these little... My camera's doing this weird thing.
No, it's a tracks. Yeah. No, do we not have their faces? Do we not know the face of Bezos and we know their faces.
I'd like to think maybe I'm wrong on this, but you know, we have these companies, right? But they're shadows, right? It's not like when you see the face of like oppression and stuff like that, it tends to be on a lower level, right? I feel like you look at somebody like the president of the United States, he is the spokesperson, right? He is the guy, and they're happy to let him talk and happy to let him do whatever it is that he wants to do. And they kind of hang back in the shadows and nobody really like hears about them as much. Bezos, I feel like, is a little different. I feel like he came up, you know, and created Amazon more from the ground. Whereas like, I feel like you got this old money kind of old, you know, slowly but surely have been kind of like, you know, buying up companies, buying up you know, the world, and nobody really knows who they are, right? The black.
You're not going to start JQing on me because I'm not a conspiracy guy. I don't think that. Okay. I think that the problem is capitalism. Like, let's be really clear. It's the idea that we've assigned value to money when money simply represents transitory needs, and we've allowed people to extract that wealth upwards. I don't think it has anything to do with the race or the religion or an organized plan. It is simply the effective result of capitalism on the world
stage. No, I I don't think that there's like a conspiracy in that sense. I just think that there's, I agree with you 100%. I think that there are people who just the acquiring of wealth has been their thing. Right. And it's a generational thing that's been going on. You know,
well, it happened in the 1800s, the robber barons. Right. It was the same thing. Americans were poor. The robber barons had all the money. Do you know what they did? They took everything from the rich people and created the most prosperous wealth and power that the world had ever seen. Hopefully we'll get around to that again. They instituted minimum wage, 5-day work weeks. They stopped child labor. They gave us the weekend. Everybody had unions. They were getting paid well. Companies made hundreds of thousands of dollars instead of billions, and those extra profits were paid to the workers. The money is fucking there. They just stole it.
Well,
like, my problem isn't my product or my audience. I have had hundreds of people come up to me and say, I can't afford your product. Like, why? It's a little thing. You mean you don't have enough money for food and housing? No, they do not. So I think that it is incumbent upon the government probably to address the needs of its citizens by preventing people from stealing all the money and starving them. I don't know. Housing is not an investment. It's a place people live. Exactly. We should build houses that last for 1,000 years. The Colosseum's still standing. We know how to fucking do it. They don't want to do it. They need to keep doing things to create the illusion that we still have to labor when we're on the verge of eliminating the need for any human to ever have to do anything ever again. Most of our systems are completely automated. Power, water, production. We've invented tasks for people to run on so that capitalism can continue to think, so people can steal.
Yeah, so... Sinners, this is your book. You came out with this, what was that, 2024?
Yeah, it's about 3 years old now.
So this is, to me, when I saw this, what had attracted to me to it when we talked about this off air was that you had this really interesting concept for sectors in the city, kind of giving mechanics to the city, giving a reason, kind of allowing the city to become... you know, more a character within your game. And I thought, oh, this is just like your version of like Shadowrun. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So it's not Shadowrun. Like, Shadowrun has a lot of baseline assumptions, right? It's a trad game. And what do I mean by trad game? I mean traditional in the sense of like 2E. Where you had a module, you went on the module, you went on the adventure, you followed the adventure. It was... It's sort of the way that early DCC modules were. They're roller coaster rides. Linear, you go through the thing, you have the events. 3Es were very focused on combat, stuff like old DCC modules were focused on experiences and traps and scenes, you know. And Shadowrun is like that. You're given a module, you go through it usually following a somewhat linear path with some options on how you approach a few things, and you watch important NPCs do things. By definition, Sinless can't do that. It's a sandbox game. It gives too many tools to the players to obviate any sort of forced path. Like in Sinless, you pick your operation. So there's going to be a lot available. You can't guarantee the players are going to pick the one you want. When they get the operation, there's no stated expectation for how they complete it or approach it. They decide their own way to approach. This is a nightmare for a traditional game. You can't control anything because it's a sandbox game. And there isn't a cyberpunk sandbox game that has a cohesive economy so that you're not constantly trying to figure out like how much jobs pay or what. It's all there. I did all the work because anytime I ran Shadowrun, I ran it like a sandbox and I had to do all this work. So in my own game, I did it. And it's not going to work well for people who want to have like a series of steps that the players follow, and then they have a series of fights where they spend a lot of rounds shooting at the same person. This is more like a tactical game, where like XCOM or Battle Brothers, where you move, you kill an opponent, you move again, you grab the treasure, you move again, you take cover, you know, you break cover, you shoot somebody, three people are now dead. You know, it's more like Warhammer 40K than it is, say, 5e, where you hit a troll seven times. And, you know, like, I watched a demo of 6e. I like Shadowrun. I played 3e for 10 years. You know, I think I'm a fan. You look at my work. I'm obviously a fan of Tom Dowd and the original creators and writers for Shadowrun, right? And I love everybody who produces the work. But I think that, you know, it's been a bit of an unfair situation. And when you look at the latest game, it's very 5e like. You can shoot. Like, I watched a combat demo where some thugs, they were shot twice with automatic weapons, and somebody cast a spell on them, and then one of the thugs finally took a point of damage and they all fled. Like, that's not what I'm selling with Sinless. What I'm selling with Sinless is a sandbox operational generator. There's different phases to the game. It's not about combat. You can avoid it if you're playing well, right? Like, that's ideal, is that you don't get noticed and have to shoot people. And because there's phases, you know, and there's a cohesive economics behind everything, it flows very well from one to the other. The things are interconnected. It creates a lot of emergent narratives, and exactly what a sandbox game should do.
When you say it's tactical, does that mean that I need to have like a combat board, like a grid?
Yeah, well, that's one of the phases. So you have the planning phase, right? And one of the things you can do during the planning phase for an operation is get like the layout or the secret entrances. And then you lay out a battle map, right? But the difference is it's not a combat map. You're sneaking on site, raising alert. And if you can keep alert below a certain value, you can do the job and never have any combat at all. But there's going to be other things moving on the board at the same time. One of my inspirations for this is Stop Thief. It's a game from the 80s and a little electronic keypad where there was a thief and the players were moving around trying to catch the thief, and you would hear things on the keypad. And so, like, that's it. It's sort of like the mega dungeon phase before combat starts. And you've had a couple wandering random encounters, and one's 180 meters away over here, and one's 360 meters away over here, and one's 100 meters away over here. And you don't have line of sight because you're in a dungeon, and you move, and then they move, and then you move, and then they move. Except in this, you have a goal. You're trying to, you know, there's treasure around, little data files hackers can steal. There's, you know, valuables around that you want to ransack, but at the same time, you have an operation, you're there for a mission. And then, of course, you can't know everything from preparation. So you run into surprises, you know, oh no, we didn't check, and now there's hellhounds everywhere, you know.
Yeah. And when you're talking about, like, so one of the things that I thought was that you just had, like, because this was, I felt like this was like, okay, you got fantasy mashed with, you know,
Yeah, it's cyber sorcery for sure. Yeah, which is a niche of a niche.
So what would you say to people who are like, that doesn't belong together? You shouldn't have.
Look, it's obviously something people like. They like D&D plus modern, right? Like, that is the thing. They made Bright. Shadowrun exists. There's been these, like, I don't know. Like, you want to be like, oh, that's not my bag. I'm not into king shaming. Like, I don't know. I don't know what you want. Like, it's okay. Like, I like cyber sorcery. I like super science and sorcery. I like wizards. I like elves. I like, not really elves. I don't like elves so much, but they're fun to kill.
What's with the hate, like, on the elves, man?
You know, you want to talk about that?
I want to hear you
about that. I don't hate them, really.
Tell me,
it's just,
where did the elf touch you on the miniature? Pointed out.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Well, you know, there's archetypes, right? The Spock, the elf, the higher being. I get it. I don't find them particularly useful, so I tend to stray away from them as archetypes. But you're right. In Sinless, we don't have that. We have mythological features reborn. We have the green and the blighted. And you can, I mean, the character creator is by far one of the most praised. We've got a a digital character creator coming. It's currently in alpha testing. It'll be here this winter. But yeah, you have tons of options in character creation to create whatever kind of thing. You want to be a giant Hephaestus like troll. You want to be like a werewolf. You want to be like a vampire. You want to be like a little elf or a gnome. It's all there. All the things you want.
So this basically gets rid of having to have like tons of splat books that have all those things, those like kind of Shadowrun has it like, it's like, oh, you want to play a goblin? You need to get this book. Whereas it sounds, this sounds like.
I don't know. Maybe this is arrogant, right? I'm not a content creator. I'm not doing this to generate revenue. This right. is art. People can like it or they cannot like it.
Okay.
We have game design spaces. Like the Magic thing isn't a splat book. It's, the core rule book is a core rule book. You don't have room for optional things. The mage book is the magic option book. It's going to have like leyline natures and characteristics for sector terraforming. It's going to have new abilities that make rank B mages more viable at their priority. It's going to address some law and magical law things that were left out of the sector phase because they're not really a core mechanic, but can be a reasonable thing people can assume to do. It's the empty design space that we're finally filling. Alex said, just redo the core rule book every 2 years. And like, I would do something else. I don't know. You know, I'm not filling a product line. I'm creating a cohesive game. That's a final thing. We'll do it and we'll move on. We might have a revised at some point in the far future. You know, we've been collecting errata for the last 3 years and it's still only like 8 lines long. If it gets to a couple of pages, you know, I'll do a reprint or something. But, you know, like it's a good, solid game. I forgot how I'm even answering this question. I hear, yes, Meatball, I know.
We're cool. Very upset. Pets.
We have a lot. We have a pet channel in the Discord. Nice. I'm building a community too, right? And ideologically free. Everybody's torn in 70 different directions, but cyber sorcery and futurism and, you know, a non-ideological approach and thought about these things is something that's appreciated. We have a surprising variety of people in our community and they seem to get along well.
That's great. When it comes to, because one of the criticisms that a lot of cyberpunk games, whether it's Shadowrun or cyberpunk, they get is that for doing deckers or hacking, net running, whatever you want to call it, it's sort of like usually creates like a mini game that kind of separates that player from the rest of the group. How do you deal with that in Sinless?
I was lucky, right? I have 30 years of other people fucking up to work off of, right? Like I know about the die problems, like from Shadowrun, right? The floating target number and then the pools and limits, but then everything is a success and then the edge. So I got to come in at the three separate games. I got to come in after 30 years of this being fucked up and set out to explicitly solve those problems, right? So we solved a lot of the die issues, right? You're bidding dice. It's closer to what's the dogs in the vineyard type mechanic than it is like a traditional Shadowrun mechanic, you know, except it's all D6s. You have pools and you bid dice for certain actions and the pools are both attack and defense, right? So you get new players and they're empty halfway through the round. And they're like, because they were like, I'm going to get big pools and roll lots of successes. But it's more about balancing your pool use through the round and what you're going to need to accomplish the mission. And, you know, you get dwindling resources as you go along and you take damage, your pools shrink, right? So the limits shrink. You can't roll as many dice. And then all the things, they're all on the same game table, right? If you can see it, you can shoot it. That includes software agents or spirits. It's all handled mechanically, like spirits have resistance to physical attacks, which it gives them bonus dice, right, to resist them. So they're just not as effective. So you use non-physical attacks, fire, or magic, or something, right? The decking takes place on the same grid. There's terrain in the dynamic terrain, right? Network access nodes and ley lines on operational maps, right, that create points on the map that aren't just relevant via cover. They're also relevant via bonus dice on tests or the ability to trigger certain effects. Like I said, it's all taking place on the same map. Everybody's facing the same opponents. All the abilities are there. Deckers can only do certain things. They're like thieves, right? They're there to steal and open files. So Deckers and Technomancers have that ability. That's their core function. But then they do different things beyond that. Like Deckers aren't going to be very combat oriented, but they'll help more with prep. Whereas Technomancers just want to stand there and squig out right in front of everybody with huge body pools and doing weird things. So like it's all taking place in the same map. Everybody's contributing to the same goal. You don't have that separation. And it's fun. Like, cause you get the shifter. He's like, well, I'm going to open up this door. And then there's guards in there. And the Decker's like, well, I'm going to open up this file. And then bees appear everywhere. And they're like, ah, why did we make these two bad decisions? You know, and everybody, you know, like you're a team, you're trying to work together and it's fun. I don't know. It's all on the same board. We don't have the separation.
So you're saying like if the hacker opens up something and there's some sort of like protective, you know, creature.
Ice, protecting bees. That,
right. Wasp. So the other players can see those bees.
Like if they can see them, they need AR nodes. You have to be able to see an augmented reality.
That's actually a fascinating way of doing it. Okay.
And cool. It's also the magic stuff. Like you have to have astral vision to see non-manifested spirits. So like you may not be able to see it, which makes it, you know, not a problem for you. They all do separate things too. Like there's a lot of rock, paper, scissors. Like it's very hard to shoot a Ronin. It's very easy to put them to sleep using magic. They don't have huge resist pools. The character builds are this way too. You will find that when you build for something, like a lot of mages build their character and they get to the end and they're like, oh my God, each of these foci weighs one and I have a strength of two. I can't carry all my wands. And so then they go back and they shift. Like the system. When you make a system, it's like giving birth, right? You never really know what your peasant railgun is going to be. And Sinless is pretty fucking solid. Surprisingly so. Like, we've had very few things. There was, like, I guess the weirdest mechanical thing we had is that there was a desire for people wearing power armor to take lethal damage because their stun pools were smaller than their physical pools because they dropped willpower. And I was like, initially, I was like, well, I think that's kind of intended, right? You wouldn't normally you would want to take stun damage instead of physical damage, right? But then the power gamers, they complained. And I was like, well, the solution for that is really in the power armor. You get the injectors that remove the stun damage, right? If you don't want to, like, I think that that's the solution, is that you devote yourself to, it's a consequence. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I feel that that's kind of an interesting thing that I wasn't expecting, but most of it works great. Yeah, it's just fantastic. And there's, like I said, there's different phases and the mechanics are the same for all the phases. You have the sector phase and then the job acquiring and preparation phase, which are kind of similar, right? There's two halves to that. And then you have the infiltration and the extraction, the combat, right? The getting on site and accomplishing the job. And then you have a chase framework where you escape in a vehicle. I think it is unacceptable that people release action or cyberpunk games without a way to have car chases. I'm too big a fan. Both of like car chase films and also things like Car Wars. Like I love them. The French Connection, Ronin, Baby Driver, new, old, Gone in 60 Seconds, Fast and Furious. I love car movies. I think it is terrible. They're a staple of cyberpunk. I think it is terrible that there aren't forefront, and our chase engine is fantastic. It's just the same as a combat engine with slightly different positioning and mechanics. We have these wonderful cards, which are not necessary to play, but help for things that might happen on the chase, you know, how you accomplish it. And then we've got these gun cards. You were showing me some of the art from the book earlier, but we've got all these resources. And then we've got these assets for face characters. They get individual that provide abilities that you can't get anywhere else. I've got a lot of positive things to say about Sinless because it's a good fucking game. I think you're right that a lot of people are just like, cyberpunk and magic, cyber sorcery, I'm not into it. And I'm like, good, okay, great. Find the person you know is, tell them, and, you know, live your life. I guess be happy.
Have you had any like blowback from like Catalyst or WizKids or whatever?
They backed the first Kickstarter. They know what's up. Yeah? I'm not breaking any copyright law. Yeah, cool. I've talked with Jason and like not I mean, I feel for them is where I stand on that. I think that some of the employees at Catalyst are some of the most creative and helpful people. And I wish they were given more support.
Is that something that if they were like, hey, dude, you want to come and work for us, produce Shadowrun content?
Oh, I would never. I would never work for Catalyst.
Okay.
I just on a moral basis, I don't believe that it's appropriate to embezzle money from writers and women. And I don't believe it's appropriate to forgive the person who embezzles the money based on their religious affiliation.
Right.
So I just on a moral principle, I'm not ever going to work for Catalyst, but I don't hold anything against anybody who does. I think it's a hard world out there. I don't think most people want to hire me because I'm pretty idiosyncratic, right? Like you hire me to do, like Raggy, I guess, hired me, or I did a book for Raggy. I think that's probably the appropriate position for me. I don't think I worked well in a company.
No. But I mean
like we talked about it. Did we talk about it earlier? Like I'm schizophrenic, like that, that's going to create all kinds of difficulties for me that a corporation isn't going to want to deal with. Right. Like I'm not built that way.
But I mean, more from a not so much from a company perspective, but more from a product, like the working in the world of Shadowrun. Like if you were disconnected from that and you had the opportunity to be able to be like, hey, man, you can make a Shadowrun game product. It could be an adventure. It could be a mission, whatever it is that you want to do. Would that be something you'd be like, hells yeah, I'm on.
I have no idea how to really respond. What I don't have any idea is how people are going to think about my response. I have no idea what people will think about what I'm about to say, but like, I love everybody at Catalyst. I want to make that clear. All the employees, Jason, the people who are writing, I get it. I don't want to cast any aspersions or any negative things on there. My problems with Shadowrun are real and manifest. I had to tell both my father and my ex that having implants made them less human when both of them had insulin pumps. Like, I didn't want to do that. It was uncomfortable. I don't like the embodied exoticism and racism in the setting. People become Ani or ogres. I've tried to eliminate that. We don't have mana. We have the Manon. We have the Manon bolt. I don't want to take Wendigo cultural icons. There's the early 1980s exoticism, orientalism of Japanese. It is a wonderful setting, but it's a bit like going back and working on Dirty Harry movies or early westerns where you're shooting Indians who are white people in brown face. So I think that I love Peter Gunn, right? But that's not modern. That's not a game of our time. Does that make sense? And so I don't know what I could add. I think that there are some issues with some things that they've done in some of their works. I don't know that I necessarily, I get it. It's like, would you, if you got to be on Star Trek Strange New Worlds, how is that today versus being on Star Trek The Next Generation or the original Star Trek, right? Like, what is a guest star today? Does it mean as much that Patton Oswalt was on Strange New Worlds? Because it's not the same thing that it was. I mean, it's still Star Trek, but I don't know. I don't have the answer. This is why I said I have no idea how we're going to respond. I don't want to make anybody feel bad. But the answer is that I prefer working on my own stuff. I don't know. Like, this isn't there's no Mayan calendar in this. The magic comes back because it's a natural feature of the universe. We were just in something we call a Shan effort field that prevented manonic interactions from being as powerful as strong. And we've been in that field for 15,000 years, which coincidentally is the length of human civilization since agriculture. And we were in that field for the 200,000, 250,000 years we were alive before. We left it. Now we've left it. The world is changing and magic's coming back. And the whole point of cyber sorcery is that you can examine current societal issues through a sci-fi lens using emotive and psychological and philosophical fantasy ideals. you know, dragons and sinless are an effect of gold lust or effect of greed. If you accumulate too much money, eventually you will transform into an insensate beast unless you go through 10 years of ritually sacrificing thousands of people. And then you can maintain your agency as you become a giant dragon. So, right? We're doing it. it's in there. We're doing it. Like, what is legal slavery look like? Because we're on the border. China's cloning people. What are we going to do when we have replicants you can grow in 6 weeks with an expire by date that are living creatures? Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to house them like livestock and sell them to people, and they're going to get abused and murdered and raped and killed. And they're going to be built to love that. Okay, good luck. What's happening? We should be a religious, autocratic, theocratic society to prevent that from happening. We've got those in Sinless too. Go visit Jesus Town. Like, I don't know. I'm making commentary about these things, about these possible futures. You know, the sex robots are coming. I don't know what to tell you. They're already here. You can already buy an AI sex robot that responds to your touch and talks. It's just pretty soon going to start being able to walk around and do dishes too.
One of the things that I found running one of my own cyberpunk games was it's very cathartic to be able to play through some of these things that frustrate me so much about our society that we're living in, and to be able to, like, in my opinion, healthily, you know, get rid of some of that anger that you have in you without, you know, actually going out and doing really bad stuff to other people.
That's important in operation design. I make it very clear in Billionaire Bounty that the point of the operation is for the players to make a sentinel decision. They do not have things happen to them. They are the ones who do things, who make the choices, who have the agency. And the great thing about that is that there are no right choices. Like, our society, in spite of our current leadership or whatever, is generally led by people who have an intelligent view of what humans need and who strive to achieve it. Go talk to some city planners. Like, these are real issues that do not have simple answers, and we've been trying to answer them forever. China spent 1,000 years trying to develop a test for magistrates to avoid corruption. Like, it's not a new problem. Like, we're, you know, like, I don't know. I think probably there's a chance for a good outcome, and hopefully Sinless can help provide some sort of exploration of those ideas and themes.
I mean, I do think that that's one of those things that's super fascinating about human behavior, is that I think some of these people who are doing really, really horrible things that are in power today genuinely believe that.
Yeah, they don't see it as a horrible thing. Like, just yesterday, the president of the United States of America said, "I'm not worried about right-wing violent agitators and murderers because they're just doing it because they're upset. It's the left-wing murderers we have to watch out for that are creating all the problems." It's right there.
I keep saying to myself, I'm like, how do you justify, like, what is the justification in your mind that you feel so strongly? Like, at some point, I understand at some point it's like, okay, I just want to get rich. Right? Like, I want to have a lot of money, but that only goes so far in my mind, where it's like having money can't be the only justification. Like, there has to be a belief system. There has to be something that you're rationalizing inside your mind where you're like, no, sure. this makes sense. This is worth the sacrifice.
You have to understand that it might be like the other people might be right. Like, I'm super left, right? Like, right. Everybody knows I'm green technocratic, like, probably left of communists. I just don't want to kill people. But like that, you know what you don't have any of in a green technocratic society? Freedom. You don't have any sort of ability to make decisions for yourself or agency in your own life because, statistically, it'll be better for you. Like, that's what city planners kind of do. That's what I'm talking about. The difficulty of these things is that maybe they're not wrong. I'm not talking about, like, obviously, our great king of child rape island leader is an idiot and is still every day just filled with the pain of the rejection of his worth by his father. And obviously is a miserable person who doesn't have any idea what he's talking. He's told he has images in his mind that he believes are true. That's not relevant. That's just politics. The answers to these questions are not clear. And when you get a lot of money, it affects physical changes in your brain, which is why you see a lot of these behaviors. And everyone believes at any given moment in time that they are making the most rational decision, providing the best good for the most people. And that's true of them too.
So one of the things, like in Canada, we have, free healthcare, so to speak. But I was talking to somebody I know who was deeply involved in like insurance and all that kind of stuff and how that kind of works. And they were saying, well, so if the taxpayer is going to pay for your healthcare, should you, but people want to smoke, they want to eat certain kinds of food. There's all these different things that you're like, well, it's your body, your choice. You can do these things. But at the same time, that's having an impact on the healthcare system. So now where do you draw the line between basically saying, listen, dude, we're willing to pay for your healthcare. We're willing to, like, if you need surgeries, you need to treat your cancers, you need all these kinds of things. But, brah, you can't be eating all that sugar. You can't be smoking. You can't be doing that.
Yeah, that is.
And it's kind of it's an interesting question, right? Because
yes. The answer to that question is I'm a game designer. I design games. That sounds like something for, I don't know, a politician or a city manager to work on. Like, why do you care what my stance is on anything? You know, like I make games and I'm allowing people to explore things through the games. I don't have that answer. And you're right. Those are the questions. Like, I'm in favor of, you know, a Jewish state and against genocide. Like, I don't think Zionism is great. I don't know. Yeah. Like, why do you care what some tiny, you know, schizophrenic game creator has on political? I don't have those answers. You're right.
No,
if you want to know what I think, I think all kinds of crazy stuff. But those aren't the answers, right? Like, I think that kind of crazy stuff because it goes in fiction. My biggest problem right now is I'm having trouble parodying reality. Like, cyberpunk settings are supposed to parody like things that are going on right now. But a headline was Gen Z takes over the country what was it I posted? Let me make sure I get the headline right. Like, I don't know how to parody some of these things that are in reality. Nepal currently being run via Discord after Gen Z takeover. Like, that is the parody that you're supposed to create, except that's a real fucking headline. So like, what do I do? How do I top that? I mean, I honestly have no idea. We're living in the disenlightenment, the post, you know, the pre eschaton, you know, pre ascension, pre singularity. Who knows? I don't know. Ask me what we should do about healthcare.
It's not so much that.
It's an illusion. Like, the money is an illusion, right? Like, like in America, the insurance companies and the hospitals arbitrarily decide the cost of things. There's a test for like croup or something that I had to take for my job. And the tests cost $110. I went to the hospital, got it done. The hospital charged me $1,110 and insurance covered $1,000 of it. The test costs $110 to buy. They charged me $110 for the test. I called the hospital. I was like, how is this decision made? What is the point of this? And the answer I got is they basically sit around in a room and just talk about what they're going to do and make up some numbers. They just decide what things cost because the whole thing is an illusion. The doctors are still getting paid. People are still getting the health care. The whole insurance thing, the whole money thing, it's abstract. We invented it. It's not real. Inflation is a lie. Like, it's created. You have less because they took it from you just arbitrarily because they decided to re-rig the system where you don't have any. You just have less.
I mean, I guess I bring these things up, like talking about the healthcare and all that kind of stuff, because I feel like these are questions that cyberpunk kind of, worlds are trying to answer, right? We're trying to, I feel like that's what science fiction was really meant for, was to posit these questions and say, hey, if this was going on, what would be the result, right?
I just want to tell you, I use my game, figure out the answer, and come tell me.
All right.
Listen, I don't know. I honestly don't know what the answer is.
You've heard it here, union members. Find the answers, send them to Courtney. And then, please send them to me too at dungeonplunger@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Highly underutilized resource for you. Send nudes, but not really. Don't do that.
I don't want that at all.
Don't send Courtney nudes. Don't send me nudes.
Please do not.
Just trying to be funny here. So as a highly creative person, what's your process like? Do you have like some kind of rituals that you follow? You got habits?
Oh my God. Like, life is a ritual. Okay. So I'm schizophrenic, which means that periodically, and by periodically, I mean frequently, like daily, I'm experienced by overwhelming seizures of emotions that cloud my thinking. And even if I can maintain through meditation and treatment and a center, it's still like a whip line in my head, looking for anything to latch onto, to be upset about or angry about or to rage about. It is very easily fed by browsing Reddit or Facebook. Mm. Right. So we do not want to feed that. So I have a number of chemicals that I use to maintain my mood, behavior, and reduce lability of my emotions. And I want to be clear. Before I was medicated, I would rage online all the time and say all kinds of crazy things because I was an unmedicated schizophrenic. And that is, in fact, the behavior they engage in. I still sometimes strongly feel those things, right? Like, but we don't encourage them, right? That's not appropriate. Like, we don't encourage any sort of threats or violence or anything on the Discord. That's not allowed, even though many of us feel very strongly. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Because yeah, violence 100%. Is wrong. We are not victims of our mental state. We are the captains of it. So we make choices. And so honestly, a lot of it has to do with managing escitalopram, nicotine, and caffeine, and trying to maintain a balance of those throughout the day so that my mood doesn't get whopper-jawed. I generally, my process is I generally wake up, browse the internet, post some things in the Discord, think about what I'm going to work on for the day. I then take a break and I play low engagement games like Stellaris or Skyrim or something where it goes for a while and I think while that is happening, something to distract my mind. The creative process, it's like your brain works on things that you're not actively thinking about. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. If you say, I have this problem, and you're like, oh, I'm going to think about this problem, your brain won't do anything. But if you set up the problem in your head, and often they're visual problems, how am I going to display this? How am I going to work this mechanic? Whatever. And then I distract myself for an hour or two. And then I'll get the answer or an insight, right? And then I get to work. I usually write or draw for 4 or 6 hours, take another break, and then there'll be another burst of writing at the end of the day, which is more creative but less cohesive. Like new systems, new ideas, they get done at the end of the day. Things that I'm more confident on, they get handled in the beginning. And you can see my work output on the Discord. Like everything I'm doing every day, it's going up on the Patreon and the job where I work publicly, right? So you can see the development of the art as it comes along and the writing. And I post first drafts for feedback from people. And then I get that feedback. And then we play test things. And I talk to people. And I'm very open. I'm not defensive about my work because I'm a professional artist. Like I've been doing this for 30 years now. I went through, when you're an artist, you're going to draw 200 pictures today and then we're going to stand around and talk about them. And you're like, how am I going to get 200 pictures done? And then you go through the critique process. And I have artists I work with to critique my work, both writers and drawers. And then, you know, it's a job. I do the media. I answer the emails. I do the thing. I don't know that I ever have a day off or that I'm ever really working. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I'm constantly producing, but I would be doing that even if I weren't getting paid. And if it's not enough to house and feed me, then I'll just starve and be homeless. Like, that's, I don't know what else to tell you. There is nothing else. Like, this is the only thing I'm made to do. I feel like I'm specifically made to do it, so I'm doing it.
Is this your full-time job, doing the game design now?
Yeah, I don't do anything else. I don't.
Nice.
It probably wouldn't have been possible without D&D. And if money were my goal, I could certainly raise a lot more money by doing Shadow Dagger Darkheart stuff, right?
Right,
doing
right.
5e stuff. Like, there's huge audiences for that. But I might, because money is made up, but, like, I'd like to have food, you know?
Yeah, that's always...
Yeah, but you know, like, it's a job. It's not a great paying job,
right?
But it is a full time job for sure. I'd say, I don't know, like, actual writing, drawing, probably 40 hours a week over 7 days. But constantly thinking and feedback and play testing. And I mean, this is part of the work. Does this feel like work? I'm chatting with you about D&D stuff and life and stuff. You know, this is the job. This is what I do. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's rad, man. I love that.
And I think that people like my work. I just think that most of the people who like my work aren't super into cyber sorcery because it's kind of niche.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get the word out and find those one or two people. You know, maybe this doesn't appeal to you, but it appeals to fucking somebody. Go find them and tell them. They'll be happy.
No, I've definitely. So this is my thing. Like, I have always been intrigued with, like, cyber fantasy style games. I've never run one yet. Because I feel like it's hard to find people who want to, like, have that mashup together. And I think maybe I was putting that on myself and not being like, oh, well, people won't want to play it. The current group that I have now is very much very open to the things that I present them. And so I've been able to branch out and try a lot more things now, which has been really amazing.
It is amazing. It greatly enhances your ability to. Yes, absolutely. It's very important. I play a ton of games.
Do you? So when you're doing your writing and your drawing and stuff, do you do that like physical medium? You got like pens and paper, or are you?
Well,
like,
I learned. I went to school in the 80s, the 90s, right? So I learned traditional. I draw from my upper shoulder. I have nerve damage because I put my weight on here or whatever. But I'm working in digital media now using traditional techniques. Not digital ones. I'm basically using digital media. I mean, you see my art, right?
Right.
It looks like line art because it is. That's what that's what I focused on in college, right? Like, so it's traditional techniques, but with modern tools, it does help. It's much faster for sure. Mm. But I didn't learn to draw on a tablet. You know, the tablet is just the tool I use now. I could still draw traditionally. I did until pretty recently, actually. It was just there's a volume to physical work, and I was in a situation where there was some bug issues in the complex. And, you know, what doesn't really go well with that are dozens and dozens of sheaves of stacks of paper. So, mm-hmm. You know, I no longer live there, and we moved that stuff into storage. So there were logistical issues too for the switch. I don't know. I'm 48. My arm shakes a lot more than it used to. The stabilization helps. Like, it's a useful fucking tool. It's what if I was an artist and I was, like, when I was learning, this is what I would have wanted. Clip Studio Pro, you know, okay. It does everything I need it to.
And what about for writing? When you're writing, is that mainly like computer? Do you have a specific program?
Yeah, I type. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Here, let me show you. I obviously have a stack of working notebooks right here, right? Like I do. Yeah, like all those are, none of these are empty here. Like, you can look at them and they're filled with pages and pages of notes and stuff. So I still write like ideas. You need to be able to put them down on paper, but the writing is almost entirely an open office.
Okay.
With Grammarly, and then I have an editor.
Okay. Neat.
Sometimes I use Google Docs if the document is going to be shared or reviewed, but I don't really like Google very much for Google Docs.
Nice. Well, one of the things that we didn't really get a chance to talk about that I kind of was as I was going through your blog, because you're like one of the old school bloggers from like back.
Yeah, in the day. I've been doing this for 20 years at this point.
You talk about Numenhalla, the Mega Dungeon. What's your experience with Mega Dungeons like?
I love dungeons. I mean, I do. I love them. They're my favorite. Hex crawls, dungeons, for sure. I had a lot of things to say, and Cyberpunk seems the place to say them. And we get the same types of things, except different. You were asking, like, getting your group to run things. The fun thing about Cyberpunk games, is the planning. Right. Mm. You have the job. And that's the part I like about Sinless the most. And I'll answer your question here in a second. But like you have the different information pieces you can find out, and they're explicit versus the mother may I of other Cyberpunk games. And so it's much more like a game like Clue or a logic puzzle where you're guaranteed that the information you get is reasonable because you spent the skill to get that information, but you cannot get all the information. And so then they plan, and they can do anything. They can get in the armored car and drive right in the front entrance and shoot everybody and grab what they want and leave. Or they can sneak in through a secret entrance, or they can follow somebody to their house and rob them and then act on site as if they're employees, or they can, I don't know, fucking anything, right? They can get on site and then hide inside and wait till the place is closed and then break out. It allows the players to build heists. Right. And it allows you to very easily sense all the information you have is needed to create that. So that's what's fun about sitting down and letting people play that. But the Mega Dungeon stuff, some of that has been published. I published a zine called Mega Dungeon, and that's where most of the Numenhalla stuff is. A lot of that was me sort of working through creating cohesive art styles and learning Clip Studio. I think. Probably, I would love to produce a collected edition. It's really inspired pretty heavily by Gene Wolfe's Book of the Long Sun, Numenhalla. I don't know how familiar you are with him. It's the kind of mega dungeon I would want to adventure in. It's filled with people and places. A lot of things are mega dungeons, right? Like Skyrim is basically a giant mega dungeon. Mm. It's just an environment, and you have different zones and different areas within those zones. And it's just a setting, right?
Interesting. It's an interesting take on it. Most people will be like, oh, well, you got to have levels and you got to have this. And
well, I mean, there are
standard OSR responses to what a mega dungeon is, right?
There are levels and with a lot of options and interconnectivity and branches. And I've run a lot of Numenhalla, and people like exploring around in it. This is what I was saying about the Cyberpunk thing is you like different things in games. Like the mega dungeon crawls are all about turn by turn movement through a giant complex that's complicated and filled with unexpected things, right? That's super fun. This is more about planning and then turn by turn movement, infiltrating a site. Right. Like I do like the turn by turn movement, but infiltrating a site and then having a quick, short, strategic more than tactical engagement. Although there is a tactical layer to Sinless for sure. I don't know. I like playing fantasy elf games. Let's do it.
Cool, man. So you have Manon Quarterly that's coming out.
Kickstarter. MQ, there was some confusion over it. It is MQ is the Sinless Magic Book. It's the full magic book. It's presented as a periodical because I want people to feel as if they understand the setting without me having to explain it. And so showing them current ads and articles in setting, in world, seems like a very entertaining way to do it. Seems very artistic. I think a lot of RPG products are designed based on word counts and to fill that word count. And that is just the opposite of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to create a work of art rather that is also a magic book for Sinless rather than just produce a product so people can buy it and move on to the next thing.
Okay. So the Kickstarter ends September 19th, 2025. So
it's like 6 days.
Yeah. So when this will be coming out on Monday. So I believe that'll be
Friday.
Yeah.
I think I ended on Friday late, Saturday early, something like that.
You'll have a few days from the time that this comes out to be able to still back
Well, even if you don't back and you want to find out more about Sinless, there's a Sinless website. www.sinless.com. You can share rpg.com, www.sinlessrpg.com. You can share that. It's got a random operation generator, so you can very easily see the different sections that operations are divided into. It's got the rules are all on there under the resources page. You can find the rules digital. You don't need to pay anything to play Sinless. You can just download it, start playing. You already have D6s. It's a good time. There's a quick start available through DriveThruRPG. Costs nothing. You can look through that. It will get your players ready to play in 15 minutes. It's got some pre-gens in it. Pre-gens are pretty cool. The pre-gens in the book work too. There's a bunch of those. So you can just play and go. The rules are very simple, very straightforward, because the complexity is in deciding what you're going to do during your turn. People seem to pick it up super quick after a bit of uncertainty of, you know, well, what do I do?
Right.
There's some Euro game features, right? The sector turn is very Euro game-ish. You have three actions and a list of actions you can do, and that's modified by the resources you have available, and things can be provided. So you build and you grow, right? It's a little 4X-ish.
That's neat. Do you have, so once this is out, obviously you sound like a man who has many things going in many fires at once. Do you have anything planned for the future after this? Like, what's the future of Sinless looking like?
We've got to understand, Sinless is an unmitigated success. You can tell yourself this through your audience. How many of your audience members have produced and sold a TTRPG that has raised $30,000 and has dozens of active weekly players? Like, that is the bar of success for me. I am not making this for other people. These are the rules I'm implementing my own game. I made this for me to play because it's the game I want to play. So I'm going to keep playing it. Have you run Kickstarters before?
I've never done a Kickstarter.
Okay. You get a lot of churn. People come in, they'll back, they'll adjust, they'll leave, they'll back again, they'll whatever. This is every one of those backers clicked, backed, stayed.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They're playing Sinless. And you would expect that for the second specific book for a specific game, that it would be that. And I can't ask for anything more. I'm going to keep playing it. What's the future of Sinless? We're going to keep playing it. We're going to develop new things. I hope we can get a tech book out at some point. I think that it takes some measure of time. So depending on how strongly Man on Quarterly fishes, our next project will either be something else to let Sinless continue to grow and everything else, and then get back to a Sinless book later. Or if, you know, we have a really strong finish, which is, we're not that far from. I only need 300 backers to make Sinless completely viable. And right now we're over half that. We're at 180, you know. And so we're just trying to get the word out. And, you know, if we get over 300 backers, next project will be a Sinless gear book, almost certainly. Sweet. I want to do a sharper image pastiche instead of a GQ pastiche.
So when I believe that Sinless was a print on demand from DriveThru. That'll be the similar thing for Quarterly.
It is print on. I don't have I'm designing, writing, drawing, laying out, publicizing, doing the Kickstarter. There's nothing left for figuring out how to make hard copies. I get that maybe some people can do it. This is a one-man operation.
Right.
There's me. There's the tech guy who's doing the website, who I've known for 20 years. And there's my editor who I pay. So it's beyond my capabilities, especially with my schizophrenia, to manage a relationship with a print thing and find places to store. I think it would be wonderful. Yeah. But it's not possible me alone. I would need help. So I don't do that.
And the cards, that's available through the DriveThru cards?
DriveThru RPG? Yeah. DriveThru part. They're right on RPG.com or RPG Now, whatever it is, DriveThru RPG. You're not necessary, right? First of all, they're available in PDFs. You can just print them out if you really need them. They're in the core book in text form, so you don't need them at all. You can play the car chase game just by printing out the board and the rule book and then just rolling on the table for the cards. Like, you don't have to use them, but they're cool. And like, the gun cards are reference cards, right? Like, I'm sure you saw them in the book. They contain everything you need to know how to operate and use the weapon.
The special
rules are on the card, all the things you need to know. So like, we've gear is an important feature in cyberpunk games, and we've created it so that it both matters via affecting your limits via the gear feature for skill, and that, you know, all the complicated stuff is pre-calculated for you on a little display card. And those are the same display cards in the books. Players are shopping for guns. They are all unique. They have unique upgrade paths. They have unique behaviors.
Awesome, man. Well, this sounds fantastic. So I encourage all of the listeners, you guys out there, to support the Kickstarter. You know, check out Sinless. I think it's amazing that you that this is, you're producing something that you want. This is for, you know, for you first. And I feel like
I love playing this game.
I mean, yeah, I think that's the most important thing. I think it's not something that you're doing just for like making money. It's a passion product, and I think that says more about it than you know, some sort of buy this thing because it was a cool idea I had. It was like, no, this is like genuinely something I care about and love, and you know, putting my energy into it. And I think that really shows in the product, you know, from what I've seen in this book. Like, I just I haven't actually played it personally, but from the little that I've looked through it, everything in here is like, wow, this looks fantastic. And I'm going to definitely, I definitely want to try and get this at my table. I may do like a, so like this is one of the like really cool.
There we go. Yeah. I'm not just producing text, right? Like every page has layout stuff on it and graphics and images, and there's all kinds of cool stuff in
like
there.
This really has like that old school 80s, yes, 90s style kind of layout.
The big, yes, that's intentional, right? Big margins. It's the appropriate stylistic fonts. Like I know what I'm doing the art. I'm doing the layout. Yeah. It makes you feel like you're picking up a book in 1980 or 1990.
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, I encourage you guys, go out there, back the Kickstarter, check out Sinless, and you know, try and get it to your table. I know I'm going to try and do that myself, because like I said, it's always been one of those things on my RPG bucket lists to get it done. And I feel
you
like
you can do it next time you play. You do download the quick start. It's got a couple operations in there. You can sit down, have a quick session.
Yeah.
Like, you can let me know what you think. It's got a little tactical introduction in, like an introductory scenario to get people used to the rules, the normal thing.
Nice. And I will have links to your blog, to your drive-through page, the Kickstarter link, of course, and your Patreon. And I will add the Sinless list as website as well.
Yeah, the Patreon is just what I'm currently using for a mailing list. There's no paywall. There's nothing on there that's restricted. Your free follow is the same as a paid follow. Okay. There's no special whatever. It's just a communication channel where it's like people, of course, they can pay me monthly. Like, I'm not going to stop you. But there's no requirement to do so. Like, if I'm going to have a mailing list, I'm going to have one where people can give me money, because apparently everybody decided that made-up concept was really important to everything they do all day long.
All right. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I don't normally talk politics and stuff on the show, but I kind of feel like an exception had to sort of be made in this. If you're talking about, you know, cyberpunk and corporations and, you know, just society as a whole, especially today, I feel like we're living in a sort of a corporate hellhole on some level.
Citizens United. Corporations have speech. And I mean, you look at the bills Congress is passing. They don't have anything to do with the people. They have to do with corporations.
No.
I mean, you can just look, go to the government website. They show you what bills they're passing. It has everything to do with what rich people have paid them to do and nothing to do with what their constituency is at.
Yeah, no, it's scary, man.
It's not a left and right issue. It's a politics issue for sure. It's a structure of politics in America.
I mean, just to sort of end on it, I 100% agree with you. I don't think that this is, I think the success of this movement has been to turn us against our own interests. You know, we have these.
What movement are you talking about?
I'm talking about in the sense of this right wing, left wing ideology has like basically.
Oh yeah, that's propaganda.
Yes, yeah, that's turned us 100%. Against our own personal interests as human beings. You know, the idea that you would fight against healthcare
propaganda. Yeah,
that you would fight against somebody's, you know, better.
They're not fighting against healthcare. They're fighting against deviant criminals who want to kill children.
It's like I said. It's.
I'm not conservative at all. But like,
no.
I live in the Bible Belt. I hear all kinds of rationalizations, argument. But like, they're internally consistent with their beliefs. It's just they have different beliefs.
Yeah, and it
and values. Like, because like, I have no respect for authority at all. But to them, that is an important value that we listen and we follow. Like that's not something that happens in my brain, but it is in theirs, and that's how they attribute value and worth.
Right. And I guess really what it comes down to, like when I consider about my personal values, like I don't consider myself to be on the left. I don't consider myself to be on the right. I do feel like I'm, you know, center left maybe. But I think it's a spectrum, right? I think most of us are on a spectrum. I think it's, you know, we're not situated in one specific thing where it's like, no, this is the way it is. It's like, no, dude, I can see points on both sides. I can definitely see points on both sides. And I think really, you know,
here's the thing that this is why it's propaganda. There are no sides.
But this is what I'm saying, right? Is that we're fighting against each other when we really should be uniting under this idea of like, okay, where can we find a common ground? Where can we find the common ground between your beliefs that you hold very strong and my beliefs that I hold strong?
This is the thing. Is the whole thing. I don't know. I mean, like, am I okay to speak here to this? Are you all right with that?
I mean,
I don't know. You sounded like you were wrapping up, and so I didn't want
to. Yeah. I'm trying to wrap it up here. I'm not sure how I'm going to do this episode now because it's kind of gone in like weird directions that I wasn't expecting.
You can cut it however you want.
Okay.
I think that that whole thing, the whole situation is completely invented. There are decisions that need to be made. And in general, the decisions are being made based off good principles, humanist principles, right? And the rest of it, when you talk about left or right or what, that's all propaganda. It is simply to ensnare you in the ideological position of somebody who wishes to use you to propagate. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not original. What original experience or thought? Those are the only things I care about coming from you. Otherwise, you're simply being ideologically possessed and repeating something somebody else has said. The reality that is presented to you in these left-right dichotomies has nothing to do with the actual situation itself. It has to do with triggering human responses to propaganda, which we are subject to. You're not immune. I am not immune to leftist propaganda. You are not immune to leftist propaganda. In fact, we respond to it based off organic principles that have nothing to do that are outside of our control. So the question is do you expose yourself to it? Do you allow it to alter your thinking? Do you allow yourself to become ideologically possessed? And I believe that the answer for me is no, because the safety you get from that ideological process, the sense of belonging, doesn't exist for me. Right? I don't care if anybody else is on my side. I find it absurd that there would be anybody who would match me in any significant way at all. So the idea that there is a group is simply one of the fictions that's given to you or a side. There are no sides. There is a specific issue in every case which discussion can be had on. And the discussions on those issues are very intelligent and very moral. And what actually happens is that somebody then uses that to engage people in their system of control and exploit them for influence and power. I don't think we should be a part of that. People feel free.
No, that's actually a very fascinating look. I hadn't really considered that from that angle. So thank you for like expanding my way of thinking about things. I think that's a great
approach. Crazy people have weird ideas. Yeah.
Look, I'm not going to say you're crazy.
This is why they want to put me in a camp. This is why.
I think you make a lot of sense. And I think this is the part that's missing, right? Is the trying to understand the perspective of the other person and trying
it's to. It's not missing. It isn't selected for. Like, why? It's there. I look for it. But the thing is that it doesn't do what they want it to do, which is to get attention and to command eyes and behavior. Like, what does? Stress, anger, frustration, you know, whatever. That's what that feed is. It's a feed of things that make you react most strongly. That will never show you a reasonable, thought out, melancholic approach to the reality of human existence, because that is not something that's interesting. It's long and technical and boring and dull and much less entertaining than they're eating our dogs. And people get told these things and it gets in their heads and then they just believe it. They use it as a world framework to work off of because it's easier that way.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. How, because this is a fascinating conversation. I find like what you're saying is really, really poignant. How would you take this and approach it in a role-playing game? Like, how would you take saying what you've said, knowing what you know about like that these are things that we're trying to like push people in a certain direction to get reactions, to get them to feel a certain way. How would you utilize that in as a game master?
Well, it's mechanized and sinless. Like you can use this persuadatron to get followers and then use an action to rage bait those followers to generate money.
Like but that's a mechanical. That's like a mechanical. Yeah, yeah.
But the players are the agents. They are going to decide. Are you going to charge people for your hospital? Well, then you're going to have profit and the people won't get healthcare. Like you decide. You are the one making the choice. How are you going to accomplish your goals? Is it easy to accomplish your goals if you use immoral methods? Yes. Yes, that is why people do them. Mm-hmm. Is it their own fault for being subject to those immoral methods and allowing you to exploit them? Maybe I can justify it. I personally, in my history of role-playing, have not found players to be colonial, have not found players to be exploitive. They are trying to sign peace treaties and maintain native rights and save the environment. One time they upgraded housing into a condo because it produced more profit, but instead of making the people who could no longer live there homeless, they simply subsidized them living in the complex. Like we do it because you are put in the role of making the choice to do it. And then you see why somebody who might have a lot of money might think it's easiest and best if they did this action that causes harm. And you get to decide the core issue of Sinless is accumulating a billion Zuzus. If you did the hardest mission, the highest paying mission, it would require you to do 500 missions without any expenses. Nobody can earn $1 billion. So are you going to exploit capital to do it? It's a lot easier if you do that. Build a couple hospitals. I don't know. You figure it out yourself is kind of where I come at it.
But like, let's say
that's how I explore it. You decide. Are you going to do that? Make it. I don't know. Let's find out.
But for instance, like you're saying, okay, so players genuinely try, and that's been my experience too, right? Players tend to be like, hey, let's talk this through. Let's like, you know, let's not resort to violence, blah, blah, blah.
Very, and it's kind of like very post-industrial behavior. It's right? Correct.
Yes. And so how do you tap into that and make them feel like, okay, I need maybe like this guy is such an asshole. Like I'm willing to like compromise my beliefs to like deal with this situation. Like, have you had experiences at the table where you were like,
this guy is a bad person? It's so easy, right? Because in Sinless, they own territory in the city, right? And the city is like their body, their brand's body. And so you just fuck with them. You burn down one of their buildings, you steal from them, they will go to the end, you know, steal their magic item. Just take it from them. What, have the guy break it right in front of them. And they're like, holy shit, fuck that dude forever. they will write songs about the revenge they get. That's how, it's so easy with Sinless because everything's out there. You can't be hidden. You can't hide. You got all this property. You got these things. Lots of places to poke. Lots of places to engage.
Okay. So poke the
players. Their behavior will affect their own body. Right.
Right.
They make a choice in a mission to rescue a bioweapon. The bioweapon is going to be used. That's going to affect their terrain. It's going to affect their city. They're making choices all the time. And the consequences of it's the consequences of my choices. That's what Sinless is about. Most sandboxes are about. Right.
Right.
What another fine mess you've gotten us into.
Yeah. No, I think like that's part of what made something like Breaking Bad such an interesting show to watch was that, you know, he was consciously making, Walter was constantly making choices, and he had options to do the right thing. But inevitably, and like we see at the very end, he did it because he wanted to, because he,
I am the one who knocks, yeah, right? His own ego, and that's pretty true. A lot of truth in that.
And that's an experience that I've always wanted to get from role-playing games, is to have this thing where you're, where you've really put consequences, like, listen, dude, you did this to yourself. You made the choice. I don't think I've ever been successful at doing that, but I want to have my players go, fuck.
You know, I like the discussion about the reason. I don't want to punish anybody. Things change, right? Sometimes for the better. You do have to let them get a lot of wins. I don't think it matters as much if they lose all the time.
Mm. Okay. Interesting.
I agree. I want players to engage, and I run a lot of sandbox games, so I make sure that I include a lot of mechanics that naturally engage the players in the emerging narrative. I want the narrative to be emergent. And so you'll see that in the operation generator, people have names, they have motivations. Any one of these, you know, you run two separate operations, suddenly you've got two separate groups of people with motivations in the city that exist, and just from running random operations. And you get this sort of emergent dynamic behavior. You're friends with somebody one day, your enemies with the next, you have different relationship ranks with them, you get access to different stores, you build new buildings. There's just a lot there that's super fun.
Nice. I like this. Well, this has been fascinating. I think we could talk about politics and people and gaming for hours, but at some point we got to end this. So, again, just want to thank you for coming on, talking about your Kickstarter. Everybody, back it, make it happen, get them to 300 plus. So, until then, keep your plungers up, and we'll see you next week with another episode of the Dungeon Plunger Podcast.
That's all for this week, folks. Music and stingers by Reed Reimer of Fable Factory Studio. Cover art by John McNally. And a special thanks to Edward Vallee, the voice of Hector.
Greetings, listener! It is I, Hector, the real Dungeon Plunger. Not that linguinion's Jason. If you want to hear more interviews like this one, follow us and share this podcast with your friends, your family, your neighbors, random strangers, the people living in the wall, the troll that lives under the bridge, the guardian of the lost city, everyone! It means the world to us that you share our podcast and make our numbers bigger. Plungers up!
And remember, when you're plunging in the dungeon and nature calls, watch out for mimics disguised as toilets. They're a pain in the butt.